A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. You know, we've been talking with our friend Mark Walters from Armed American Radio, doing the Mondays with Mark, but Mark has an unavoidable thing that he has to deal with today. So we're going to do a Tuesday with Mark this week. We'll have him on the program tomorrow. We are going to be talking, however, about something going on in Massachusetts, the ongoing efforts to undo Chapter 135 via the ballot box. But before we get to that, though, let's talk a little bit about Snope and Ocean State Tactical. These are the two cases that are, well, have been pending in conference before the Supreme Court for, gosh, I guess over a month now, right? Snope versus Brown, that is the challenge to Maryland's ban on so-called assault weapons. The Ocean State Tactical versus Narana is the challenge to Rhode Island's ban on so-called large capacity magazines. Now, Snope versus Brown has been fully decided on the merits, albeit not in the way that gun owners would like. The Fourth Circuit took that case en banc before the three-judge panel had issued its decision, which would have overturned Maryland's gun ban. They preemptively decided, you know what, we're going to hear this en banc, and they upheld Maryland's gun ban, saying, well, AR-15s, they're unusually dangerous. They're not protected by the Second Amendment in the first place. They're like machine guns. Absurd, right? Ocean State Tactical versus Narana is not fully decided on the merits yet. This is an interlocutory appeal, right? It's basically appeal of a denial of a preliminary injunction. It's interesting that the court has actually held on to that case for as long as it has, along with Snope, quite frankly. Not really sure what's going on here. You know, Friday was basically the deadline for cases to be heard this term. The court did not accept either one of these cases on Friday. Kind of expected that today we would hear something. And there were a lot of folks like Casas Morris, Second Amendment attorney, just rip off the Band-Aid. If you're not going to grant cert, just tell us now. Well, that didn't happen, which, again, is interesting. I have no idea what's going on here. But it does seem like if we were just waiting on a written dissent from a denial of cert, there's plenty of time to have written that denial. Or that dissent, right? If it's Justice Thomas or Justice Alito, maybe Justice Gorsuch signing on. They've had weeks to write that dissent. So maybe we are looking at a grant, albeit for next term. So the court would not decide the issue of whether or not commonly owned firearms, commonly owned magazines could be banned without violating the Second Amendment rights of American citizens in 2026. Could be that we're looking at a per curiam opinion, which would be in a unanimous decision. And on the face of it, that sounds kind of crazy, right? A 9-0 decision from the Supreme Court saying that, yes, AR-15s and large capacity magazines are protected. But, you know, you go back and you look at the Catano decision, which came out in 2016. That was a per curiam opinion in which the Supreme Court said, yes, stun guns are protected by the Second Amendment. They may be unusual, but they are not dangerous and unusual. And the Second Amendment protects arms that were not in existence at the time of the founding. Justice Sotomayor signed on to that. Justice Kagan signed on to that. So theoretically, they might be able to sign on to an opinion that says, yes, semi-automatic firearms are also commonly owned. They're not dangerously unusual or dangerous and unusual. And therefore, they do fall under the protection of the Second Amendment. I don't know if Justice Jackson would sign on to that, but I guess stranger things have happened. Again, we don't know what's going on with Snope and Ocean State Tactical, and we're probably going to have to wait another week before we find out what the court is going to do. But I will say I'm actually a little more optimistic today than I was last week, because we did not just get that flat-out denial this morning, and I'm going to view that as a positive sign. Maybe that's just the eternal optimist in me, but why not? A little optimism never hurt anybody, right? So we'll keep our eyes on what's going on with the Supreme Court, and we'll probably talk a little bit more about that on the program tomorrow with Mark Walters as well. Right now, though, let's talk about what is going on in Massachusetts. You know, Chapter 135 went into effect last year, kind of. right? Major portions of this sweeping gun control law were put on hold for 18 months. They are still trying to figure out how to implement some other provisions of Chapter 135, right? The state of Massachusetts now redefining firearms to include long guns, which was not the case until Chapter 135, which makes some sense. But then, you know, Massachusetts has this firearms roster. Everything has to be approved. And up until now, that meant handguns only. Now they're trying to figure out how to approve rifles and shotguns for sale in the state of Massachusetts. We talked a little bit about that with Jim Wallace last time he was on the program, and they're kind of making it up as they go along, quite frankly. There are efforts underway to undo Chapter 135 in court. Also efforts, though, to undo Chapter 135 of the ballot box, which takes us to this story from the Boston Herald. Massachusetts gun law repeal campaign raised $136,000 in 2024. Now, on the one hand, it is great to see a real grassroots effort here. On the other hand, boy, I think the Civil Rights Coalition could use our help, because when this campaign to undo Chapter 135 kicks off in earnest, the defenders of this gun control law, they're going to be flush with cash. You know that Bloomberg is going to open up his wallet. You know that the gun control groups are going to spend hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars, defending this gun control law. And it's going to be up to us as gun owners to make sure that there is the money available for a real educational campaign directed at non-gun owners in Massachusetts, who are a majority of residents, as to why this law is such a bad idea. The Boston Herald reports that Toby Leary, head of the Civil Rights Coalition, owner of Cape Gunworks in Hyannis, says that he's been making a lot of personal phone calls to solicit donations, talking to firearm manufacturers who may chip in larger amounts of money. He says a lot of people have pledged monthly commitments, and we're going to continue to do that right up until the election. He said that'll fund the fight and the education of the public and making people aware that their rights should never be so fragile that an elected body in any state can just vote them away. 876 individual donations between August of last year and December 31st of last year. Now, keep in mind, there are about a million gun owners in Massachusetts. No, maybe I may be wrong about that. There are at least 100,000 gun owners in Massachusetts. Let me revise that number down. 876 individual donations. You know, again, we can talk about what we as gun owners outside of the state of Massachusetts can be doing. But man, I would like to see that that number double, triple, increase tenfold from 876 donations. And again, maybe not all of those from in-state gun owners. Why not 8,000, 80,000 in-state donations to the Civil Rights Coalition to protect, preserve, claw back the right to keep and bear arms in the state of Massachusetts. And one of those donations, a very sizable figure, coming from Smith & Wesson, donating $50,000 to the Civil Rights Coalition. That's the single largest donation. Leary said the company wanted to, quote, step up and help after facing the hostility of government towards the industry. When Leary talked to the Boston Herald last week, he said, I'm actually out of Chacha right now in Las Vegas, and I personally thanked the CEO, Mark Smith, and thanked him for the generous donation. He said he was very happy to help. He said, keep fighting. So that was the impression from Smith & Wesson. They are very eager to help the cause here in Massachusetts. And that's good, because Smith & Wesson, listen, they understand, right? I mean, they basically packed up their headquarters and moved because there was legislation introduced in Massachusetts that would have made it illegal for Smith & Wesson to continue to manufacture. Remember, the guns that aren't available for sale in Massachusetts, they could still make them. And lawmakers said, no. We've got this assault weapons ban. That would include making these guns here. And that's one of the reasons why Smith & Wesson said, listen, it is untenable for us to do business in this state. So we're packing up after more than 100 years in Gun Valley. And we're moving our headquarters to a friendlier climb. The whole of government attack on the right to keep and bear arms continues unabated in Massachusetts. And again, it's going to be a real grassroots effort to undo these unconstitutional provisions. Leary says the Civil Rights Coalition just getting started with fundraising, education, and continuing the grassroots activism. He said, we're going to be doing some educational seminars around the state. The donations that you just mentioned are going to fund that over the next year and a half. As we get closer to the election, we'll ramp up our messaging and our presence. We're going to run it like a regular congressional campaign or any type of political campaign that you see. Now, again, this is not going to be on the ballot this year. The vote to undo Chapter 135 will be on the ballot in 2026. So the good news is that there is still time to raise this money, to get this campaign going. And Toby and the grassroots volunteers of the Civil Rights Coalition have been doing an incredible job to date. But again, they need our help. They need Massachusetts gun owners to step up as well. But this is not a fight that is limited only to the state of Massachusetts. If the anti-gunners can export these terrible ideas, these awful laws to other states, they absolutely will. And so this is our fight too. Even if you live in a Second Amendment-friendly state like Wyoming or Texas or Tennessee, this fight matters because it's not going to stay in Massachusetts. So we'll be talking with Toby Leary here in the weeks ahead. But again, if you would like to be a part of the cause, check out the Civil Rights Coalition online. And yes, you can make your donation to help fund the fight to keep the Second Amendment alive in Massachusetts. Right now, let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Not a true recidivist report. I don't know if this guy has a previous criminal history, but did get quite the plea deal for firing a gun in a gun-free zone in Chicago. Man who fired a gun on CTA platform gets 2-year prison sentence on paper. In reality, he's going to do far less than 2 years behind bars. So it was February 19th of last year. Chicago police responded to the Chicago Transit Authority station, the Division Blue Line station, after 911 callers reported shots fired on the platform. It was about 1:15 a.m. When police arrived, CTA workers and passengers directed them to the first car of a train, which had been stopped at the station. According to CWB Chicago, as officers walked towards the car, they saw an individual named Brandon Taylor, quote, fall out of the first train car right on his face and stomach. They recovered a handgun from his hoodie pocket, 6 shell casings from the area. A prosecutor said that CTA surveillance video showed Taylor firing a gun into the tunnel. The Chicago police said the gunshots came after Taylor had a disagreement with the train operator. Now, it's unclear whether Taylor fired shots at the train operator or just, you know, fired out of anger, just randomly. He was not legally allowed to own that firearm. He did not have a concealed carry license in Illinois. And records show that he pleaded guilty to reckless discharge of a firearm and aggravated unlawful possession of a firearm. Now, CWB Chicago reports that when prosecutors filed charges against Taylor last year, Judge Susana Ortiz denied the state's request to keep him in jail as a threat to public safety. She sent him home on an ankle monitor instead. And for every day that Brandon Taylor spent in his home with an ankle monitor, he was earning good time credit against whatever sentence he was going to receive, even though he's at home because he had the ankle monitor on. So CWB Chicago reports that Judge Anaja Hansen sentenced Taylor to 2 years in prison, but with that day-for-day credit that he's been earning while sitting on his rear end at home, Taylor is expected to be released on Valentine's Day. So, yeah, a true sweetheart deal and a kiss on the mouth from the criminal justice system for violating Chicago's gun-free zone, right? All of public transportation in Chicago is a gun-free zone. If you have a concealed carry license, it doesn't matter. You cannot carry on a public bus. You cannot carry on a public train. It doesn't matter if that disarms you throughout the course of your daily routine. Well, it doesn't matter to the state of Illinois anyway. It doesn't matter to the city of Chicago. There is a lawsuit that has been ongoing. And last fall, a U.S. federal judge did rule that the law is unconstitutional, at least as it relates to the named plaintiffs in the case. But so far, the edict remains in effect for virtually everybody else. The state of Illinois is continuing to defend the ban now before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. But this is, again, what happens in practice, right? Somebody who's not legally allowed to own this gun. Well, let me put it this way. did not legally own the gun. I don't know if Brandon Taylor was prohibited from owning a firearm, but he did not have his FOID card, did not have a concealed carry license, carried in a gun-free zone, fired six rounds after a disagreement with a train operator, and again, what amounts to a year on house arrest and a couple of weeks in prison. That's it. Okay. So if that's how the criminal justice system is treating these incidents where guns are getting discharged in public transportation, why defend the ban? Just let people who are responsible gun owners, who are legal gun owners, exercise their Second Amendment right to carry, to protect themselves, not, again, only while they're on public transportation, but before they get on that bus, after they get off that train car. The state continues to defend the indefensible. And in the meantime, offenders are getting away, not just with a slap on the wrist, but again, with a kiss on the mouth. All right. Finally today, our good deed of the day. No, I'm sorry. We haven't even gotten to our armed citizen story yet. How about we go there then, to New Mexico, where a armed homeowner killed a suspect who kicked in a door over the weekend. This was in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. KOAT in Albuquerque reported it as an attempted home invasion over the weekend, around midnight on Saturday, and one that was thwarted, they say, when the owner shot and killed a man who broke down the front door. There were two adults, three kids, sleeping in a home in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. When the sound of the man entering the house woke up the owner, he grabbed his gun, shot the intruder. Police say the intruder was taken to a local hospital where he did pass away. Rio Rancho Police Department responded to the incident. They said the results of the investigation will be sent to the district attorney, but the owner of the home has not been charged. Again, at this point, all indications are this was a justified act of self-defense. We'll keep our eyes open, though, for any more details as they become available. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing. Some hotel housekeepers in Alabama who helped save a kidnapped teenage girl, not only from her abductor, but from being abused by her abductor. This is a scary story. Thankfully, it does have a happy ending. It was a Sunday afternoon in Dothan, Alabama. AL.com reports a teen girl was rescued by housekeepers at that hotel in Dothan after a 46-year-old man forced the girl into a room. Hotel housekeepers saw the abduction, and they immediately intervened. They removed the teenager from the room. They called 911. And the suspect apparently taken into custody not long afterwards. Stephen Ayers has been charged with first-degree kidnapping as well as first-degree sexual abuse. It was just after 1 p.m. on Sunday when Dothan police responded to a report of a possible kidnapping at a hotel. When officers arrived, employees told officers that a man had forced a female into a hotel room. That's when the housekeepers intervened and rescued the girl, who only listed as being a minor under the age of 18, according to Police Chief William Benny. Police attempted to make contact with the suspect, but then he fled on foot. On the second floor of the hotel, officers were able to surround him, though, and take him into custody. Victim police said Ayers had made sexual advances towards her, which she refused. Ayers then touched the victim inappropriately. She tried to leave the area, and police say that's when Ayers grabbed the girl from behind and forced her into that hotel room. Authorities say that Ayers and the victim did not know each other. He is currently being held without bond in the Houston County Jail. Dothan Police Chief William Benny says crimes like these will not be tolerated. The Dothan Police Department will hold those who commit these crimes accountable to the fullest extent of the law. And again, in the right place, at the right time, willing able to do the right thing, stepping in and intervening to save this teenage girl from harm. These anonymous hotel housekeepers in Dothan, Alabama, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, listen, that is about all the time we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Yes, by the way, this past weekend, it was kind of a bittersweet moment. The chemo support beard, which I have been growing out for almost 8.5 years. I say growing it out. It got to the point where it gets down about here and then starts getting stringy. So I kept it. You know, I started growing that out when Miss E had to go undergo chemo for the first time. She was going to lose her hair. And, you know, when sometimes people lose their hair during chemo, you shave your head in support. But, I mean, I've been bald for my entire adult life, so that wasn't going to do anything. So Miss E asked, she said, you know what? Grow out your beard. I've always wanted to see you with a big beard. And so I did. And, you know, it just seemed to work for so long. Missy did so well. And, you know, she might have felt crummy from the treatment, but she didn't feel crummy from the cancer. And so there was a part of me, I would joke about, you know, I'm not saying my beard has magical powers, but I'm not saying it doesn't have magical powers either. If nothing else, that beard was a sign of my support for Missy. And she, I will tell you, she got to the point where she didn't really like it that long. She would call me her homeless wizard, and she would have been fine with it being about this length. So this past weekend, I went back to my barber, Knuckles the Barber, who also was the same barber who shaved her head for the first time when she was losing her hair. And she said, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and rock it. She got the hot leather head shave, and Knuckles did such a great job with her. He's the only guy that I've trusted with my beard for the past few years, and went back in on Saturday and said, yeah, all right, you know what, it's time. So I wasn't going to cut it off completely, but back to what she would have wanted it to be. So there you go. All right, you guys have a great rest of your Monday. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. We'll see you back here tomorrow with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. Mark Walters will be with us from Armed American Radio. And until then, be well, be safe, and be free.